This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome on into First Take, everybody. Back where we belong, inside the Caesars Superdome. Jeff Nowak and Steve Geller getting you ready for the Saints preseason finale against the Tennessee Titans. Not only great to be back in the Dome, Jeff, but hallelujah, the preseason coming to an end today.
Yeah, I missed this place. I forgot how much I like this building.
It's well, we forgot where we were stationed,
yeah,
too.
But yeah, that's a whole other story. We did walk an extra like quarter mile around the field before we realized we were in the wrong place. But we're here now. That's the important thing. And so are some of the Saints players. Like, I think everyone will be in the building, but I don't expect we see a whole lot of starters on the field, or at least, you know, like Derek Carr, you know, Eric McCoy probably gets the day off. Guys like that, guys that, you know, aren't competing for positions, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, or don't necessarily, you wouldn't qualify them as guys who need every rep they can get, like a Trevor Penning or even a Taliese Fuaga. Like those guys I expect to be out there. But yeah, it's definitely not going to be the Saints we've seen to start the last 2 weeks.
Something I missed, obviously, with the open practice for fans on Tuesday, Wednesday.
Well, there was one on Tuesday and then there was
Friday,
one on
Friday. I'm sorry, Friday here. Yeah. The days blend together.
It's
but
right.
Didn't get to see, obviously, some of the new amenities available for fans here in the Dome. And it was nice to walk by and kind of look at the new food menu. We saw that 40-yard length of bar that looks mighty impressive.
I could have used a shot. I didn't go out there with measuring tape, but I believe it when they tell me it's 40 yards long because it took a while to walk by that thing.
That's how we got distracted,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, we were like, where are we? We just walked by a bar for 5 minutes. It's still going on. But no, there's some really cool stuff that they've added in here. I don't, you know, I'm on the field during the games. I don't get to enjoy
right.
A lot of the stuff that is happening up in the loge level, but it seems like they've done a really good job with this.
Want to give a warning to fans, too, because of the construction that's going on around this area as they try to beautify the surrounding area of the Superdome for the upcoming Super Bowl. You might want to get into the area a little bit earlier, get your parking settled, find out which gate you have to go into,
yes.
Because it's a lot different. Especially with construction going on. We know what a nightmare it can be.
If you remember one thing getting to the building today, it should be go in the gate they tell you to go in, right? Like that's like the one thing you need to be 100% on because otherwise, you know, it's really just a matter of whether you want to waste a lot of time or not. Go in the gate they tell you because that's going to be a problem if you don't.
This hour, obviously, we're going to start breaking down what we expect to see from the Saints, what we want to see from the Saints this preseason finale. Also, some sound bites of linebacker Anthony Orji. I think he's got a roster spot pretty secure, but we'll get into some of his talk. And also from tight end Foster Moreau, some really eye-opening stuff from him. You can tell that this guy is a team leader and definitely one of the cuts I love. I think it was one of the camera guys asked him, are you the, you know,
accountability enforcer.
Nice. I love the term.
Yeah, except he disagrees. He just thinks he's the loudest. And I think that's probably true. Like, he's the guy that when we're out of practice, you hear someone yelling and you don't know who it is, and then you're like, yeah, that was Foster. Of course it was Foster. Who else would it be? He's the one who you can definitely hear. One time, Carl, there was refs out there one day, and he would refer to Carl Cheffers by his full name, and he'd be like, that's a terrible call, Carl Cheffers. And it was very funny.
Well, just so you know that I know who you are.
Yeah. I didn't even know, like, I appreciate it because I didn't know exactly which ref crew was out there until he started yelling out at my full name. And, like, that's just, it's kind of a funny thing because that does happen on the field, right? Like, you know these refs. I don't know if you've been watching the Hard Knocks at all for the Bears.
No, don't have Max. I'm lame.
I've been going through it a little bit, and, like, one of the meetings they had was, like, you know, you have to study the refs that are calling your games. You have to know what they like to call. And like, you, especially as a quarterback, and they were talking to Caleb Williams about this, especially as a quarterback, if, you know, if you have a terrible relationship with the head umpire, that's going to follow your entire career. Like, you want to get on their good side. And it's just kind of funny to see how these guys interact with the refs, because that is important. Like, that does matter. As much as you'd like to think, like, a human element doesn't factor in at all, objectively, 1,000% does, and that's true in any sport.
Well, yeah, like we just saw, what was it, the first preseason game or the second one where Bill Vinovich's staff was on hand and was like, that was the first time he had reffed a Saints game since the infamous
That was the Cardinals game that was in Arizona. It's the first time he's been on the field, and that's right. Why, like, hey, they overturned that touchdown for Spencer Rattler, and I was like, man, Bill Vinovich, everyone's going to be a huge fan of his now. And no, that's not what's going to happen. But
do you think he ever comes back and does a game in the Dome?
I mean, at some point, no, I don't actually. You know, you'd think, like, at some point, especially in the playoffs, because they usually pick the highest graded crews. And that's the crazy thing about it is he's annually one of the highest graded umpires, like officials.
Right.
Yet he's enemy number one because of that moment, and for good reason. And it's funny because, like, he's the, you know, and that one guy is kind of the figurehead of that group. He's not even the one that screwed up when you really look at it. He's just the one who had to announce it to the stadium.
Exactly, yeah.
But, yeah, it's man, that's, you know, don't get me started on that day.
Looking into this game, I know we're expecting, I think, the Titans starters to get some run in this game, but not so much from the black and gold side of things.
Yeah, like we were talking about, Derek Carr, I think Nick Underhill reported this. He's usually pretty quick on those. He's not going to go. A handful of starters aren't going to go. So I'd expect Eric McCoy, Cesar Ruiz probably gets the day off. Chris Olave, Alvin Kamara, I'd be surprised to see those guys out there. But, you know, Jamal Williams, I think this is going to be a game.
Probably Taysom too, no Taysom.
Taysom I wouldn't expect to see. I think this is going to be a game where you highlight the players who are competing for those final roster spots. I think there's about 9, give or take, depending on how you break up the positions, 9 roster spots that could still be won in terms of you don't know exactly who's going to fill them yet. Like, there's a handful at wide receiver. Do you go with a guy like Jordan Mims or James Robinson? You know, at linebacker, I would have originally slotted DeMarco Jackson in there, but he had an injury late in the week. So does that open the door for a Khalik Hudson, a Monty Rice, someone like that? Is there any question as to the specialists? I think punter is probably the biggest question, even though people are really excited about Charlie Smith. I think Blake Groupie is that guy. And so, yeah, I think that's who you're going to see. And the question is, who starts a quarterback? That's the biggest question, because I had someone come at me and be like, hey, well, they've been alternating, so it's definitely going to be Jake Haener because that's how they've been doing it. I disagree with that. I think you're past the point where you're worried about equal reps. Whoever starts this game, that's a statement, because you're starting with a handful of ones.
Yeah, right.
And I think that you should be looking at this as an opportunity to get whoever your backup quarterback's going to be live reps with at least a handful of the starters that they would be expected to play with, right? And so if it's Jake Haener, I look at that as, hey, if you can go out there and have a good performance, you can win that job. If you go out there and don't have a good performance, if you look shaky like he did in the preseason finale last year, then I think you open the door. But either way, I think whoever starts this game, you're giving them the opportunity to either win or lose the job. And then the guy behind him, his job is to go in there and play as well as he can, and if that door is left open, maybe step through it. But I do think that whoever starts this game at quarterback is a statement. It's not just, okay, we're getting these guys equal reps.
And when you mention, like, obviously a quarterback getting some run with the ones, that's basically on the offensive line. There's not really anybody else, I think, that's getting any looks from your first team in this preseason.
It depends what you call the ones, right? Like obviously, like you look at the receivers are Rashid Shaheed and
Olave,
but there's other receivers who are going to make your roster who would be expected to play, right?
So absolutely, yeah.
So you see a guy like Cedric Wilson, are you out there with an A.T. Perry above means, and how they work together is important too. So I also think you're going to have some first-team offensive linemen.
See, I think AT is one of those guys still fighting for that roster spot along with Bub.
I agree. I think that he's a guy that has not had taken a step forward other than that first preseason game, which he always seems to show up in the game. So that's something to put in his column. But I don't think he's had a particularly strong set of practices. So do you err on the side of a Bub means, of, Equanimeous St. Brown, a veteran who maybe you have a little bit more faith in to go out there and block at a high level.
And he wasn't around early on, too, for dealing with injury. And it's nice to see him back in the mix.
Yeah, he missed the first preseason game, but he's back now. He had a hamstring issue that kept him out for about a week and a half. But he was out there against the 49ers. Didn't really do much, right? So I think that's kind of where you are is, who can make plays, right? Who can force the coaching staff to start to talk about them, both on the offense and the defense? Right? A guy like Isaiah Foskey, I don't think his roster spot's in jeopardy because when you're a second-year player, a second-round pick, I think just going out there and doing the work is enough to keep you around. Hint, hint. Running back, there's a particular player that was a third-round pick from last year who has not been able to do that, and I think that is a separator when you're talking about a higher draft pick. If you're out there working and developing, you're gonna get looked at more sympathetically from a roster perspective than a guy who just hasn't been out there. And we've heard Dennis Allen be pretty vocal about, we just don't know, and I'm talking about Kendre Miller here, we just don't know what he can be expected to do, where he can be expected to impact this offense. Can he pick up the system? Does this work for him? We just don't know, and is that enough to secure your roster spot? That's a question. I would expect him to start on IR, and you go from there.
The worst hamstring injury in the history of hamstring injuries.
I mean, yeah, it's got to be pretty significant, right? He's been out a month. Like, legit, a month. That's like, a long time.
Did they get into team drills or was still individual stuff?
No, they were doing the drills where they, like, run through cones and stuff. And, like, the tackling thing that, like, hits you in the face as you run through it. Like, that sort of stuff. Like, that's what they were doing.
Oh, my leg.
Yeah. Yeah, it was wild. Especially knowing what we know and the conversations that have been had around, like, hey, we need this guy to do the work, stay healthy, and then to have that happen immediately. That's an easy – it's a very quick way to gain some frustration and criticism from the coaching staff, I think.
And it was definitely one of those where you can't – Dennis Allen couldn't hide it. It was pretty clear that he's aggravated with the situation.
Yeah, and I mean, should he hide it? Like, that's my question. Like, I saw some of the reaction.
He didn't even
like,
try to play it off,
like,
though.
Like, why would you kind of throw a young player under the bus for repeated injuries? And I understand that, but it's not really about the injuries. It's about, like – how do you evaluate a player that you haven't seen?
Right. And he's talking about college footage for crying out loud.
Yeah, well, and like this is something that happened last year, right? Like he came in injured, which obviously you can't do anything about that. They chose to draft him despite that injury. Then he got hurt early in the season, missed a game or two. Then he got hurt again in week 9 and missed the next, 8 weeks, right, with an ankle injury that I think you probably wouldn't have expected to be an 8-week ankle injury. Right, and he came back in week 18, looked good.
Yeah, teased us all in that
looked
finale.
Looked like the player that you're like, I understand why they drafted
right,
him.
Right, going
now.
Into next year, woo, we look but like we got some a guy that can run with Alvin.
It can't just be that. Like, you got to have more, and so we'll see. I don't expect him to be out there today.
No, we haven't seen him at all.
And the question is now, how do you approach that situation, right? Do you, for a guy like Jordan Mims, for example, who's going to be out
IR,
here.
You say IR, maybe physically, the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list?
No, you won't be on the PUP list. I think... there's rules with the PUP list. I don't want to get into it, but the rule changes for the NFL made this year regarding IR.
Yeah.
One of them is you can designate two players as long as they're on your reserve list prior to the season. You can designate two players to be kind of early IR ads.
Yeah.
So rather than in the past, you would have to say, okay, I don't want to cut Kendre Miller, but I do want to put him on IR. You would have to carry him through cutdowns, and you would have to, say Adam Prentice. It's always the fullback I go to because no one's claiming the fullback, right? So it's like you would say, okay, Adam, we're going to cut you, but don't go anywhere. Like, don't try to get your security deposit back. We're going to bring you back, but we have to wait a day before we can put Kendre on IR or whoever it is on IR. Now you have the ability to do that beforehand, which saves you kind of that annoying process. I think Dwayne Washington was a player a couple years ago that was like, he got cut and everyone would be like, hey, guys, don't overreact to this. he's not going anywhere. And I think the next day he was in the locker room.
Right, exactly.
Like, I was like, I guess he's coming back. You know, so that's going to be a question with a guy like Kendre. And then you look at Nick Saldivari is another guy who's been out with an injury for a long time. Trajan Jeffcoat.
Yeah, you mentioned
could
Saldivari.
Still end up
on
IR.
That's
yeah.
a name. It's like, oh, my gosh, I totally forgot
day
about
him. Day two
of
camp. Day two of camp. And then he stuck on the roster all the way up until Friday. And then they waived him on Friday with an injury designation, brought back Andrew Dell,
right,
who is a guy I expect to land on the practice squad and be active early in the season. And Cameron Johnson, I think his name is. Kid out
from
of Southern,
right.
Yes, defensive tackle. And so that's going to be those are guys who are going to be out here today. I think kind of trying to earn a practice squad spot. I think when you're added this late in camp, that's got to be the goal for you. You're not making the roster, but you have to show, hey, I have enough juice that you should want to keep me around.
When you talk about, obviously, these roster spots, a job opening that these guys are fighting for right now, how many do you feel are really still open at this point that guys are truly fighting for amongst the offense and defense? I guess even special teams when it comes down to it.
Special teams is tough because a lot of the roster spots that you're saying are still being fought for would be guys that you expect to be strong special teams contributors, right? So it's not like, well, there's one special team spot that's there. Like a guy like Stanley Morgan is really intriguing because, okay, do you have two or three wide receiver spots open? I'd say there are at least two wide receiver spots that you're trying to figure out behind Cedric Wilson, Rashid Shaheed, and Chris Olave.
Right.
But is there a third that's more of a special teams ace? Because if there is, then that's probably Stanley Morgan, who I think would come in as a special teams ace. I think there's one running back position, and it's going to come down to Jordan Mims or James Robinson. Maybe Jacob Cabote, if I'm misreading that, right? Offensive line, I think you have probably one, depending on how many you keep. Do you keep Kyle Hergel, a guy who's a UDFA, who's worked in with the first team, or do you keep Shane Lemieux, a veteran who I would think could play multiple positions, but based on what I saw at center against 49ers, I'm not feeling great about that right now. So if he's only a backup guard, I'd rather keep the young guy. So that's kind of where you're at. Cornerback, safety, one or two guys are still trying to come out on top of that heap. You know, a guy like Jawan Williams who just showed up this week, but has a lot of intriguing potential. Can he show that it's like, hey, you guys want to keep me around? I'm 6'3", long arms, and I can make an impact. Yeah, so that's kind of where you are. I would say between 8 and 9 roster spots today could be determined by the performance out there.
One of those guys that's fighting for one of those roster spots, linebacker Anthony Orji. We're going to hear from him when we get back from our break here on First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Coming back with more First Take right after the break here on WWL. Back into Sports Talk. You heard there mentioning the Odyssey app. The great thing about that, too, you could be inside the dome, obviously watching the game, but you could still hear Deuce and Haas and as well as Jeff Nowak on the Odyssey app.
It'd be like an instant replay for what your eyes are seeing.
There you go.
An audio replay?
An audio replay, yeah.
Yeah.
Of the play that just happened.
Yeah. That's tough. Yeah, you might get a little confused if you try to do that. But that's what you are into. Go you do you.
We're back here on First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Want to get into some of our prime cuts for the show. The Training Camp Soundbank, brought to you by the Sound Banking of First American, mentioning linebacker Anthony Orji, year two for him. Want to say, what's different for the linebacker that's different from last year?
Like I've been saying, my mental, just letting loose. Like I said, I just trust in God, just give all my worries to God. I feel like physically, I don't feel like there are many big physical changes I made from last year to this year. Like, I put on a few pounds, got stronger, got faster. I still worked this offseason, but I think the main focus for me this offseason was letting go mentally, just being able to just go out there and play football instead of being stuck in my own head. Like, if you see last year it was like I put so much pressure on myself. I'm like, dang, I got to make this play. I got to do this. I got to make the team. I got to do that. I got to do this. So then all that pressure just crushed me. So then this year I was like, all right, let me just – all that worry, let me just give it to God. Let me give it to God, and then that's what I'm doing. I feel lighter. Like I feel lighter on my feet. The game's moving slower. I feel like I know my playbook better as well. So I'm just out there, literally just playing ball instead of thinking.
Orji, Jeff, the linebacker out of Vanderbilt, year two for him. It's going to be interesting to see what he can do. I think he'll be in action in this game as well. Just because I wouldn't say a spot is locked up, but he's got, I guess, maybe in pencil on there right now, waiting to be put in pen.
Yeah, when I talk about the roster spots that I think are still up for grabs, like I look at him as a guy who should be on the roster. Like, I don't think he has a ton left to prove. Obviously, he's a young player who always has something to prove.
Right.
But in terms of making this roster, I think you go into this game feeling like he's made it. You know, guys behind him, I think there's one roster spot that you're trying to figure out. But he's my fourth linebacker right now in a group of five. Now, beyond that, I'm not sure, but I do think his approach is what has kind of set him apart this year relative to last year. He was talking about how, like, you know, he felt like he was getting worse every week, and his, like, PFF scores were going down, and he didn't want to believe it. But he looked back, and I'm like, yeah, like, I was getting worse because I was kind of getting paralyzed by indecision in a lot of ways. Like, you know, he talked about – a lot of times we talk about young players, and we talk about limiting mistakes and making fewer mistakes. And what I asked him about, and what I think is true for a lot of guys, is it's really not about making fewer mistakes. It's about playing freer and knowing that you're going to make mistakes, but – understanding why those mistakes were made and not constantly be thinking about how you can avoid them. Play fast and fix mistakes as you go, because you can get paralyzed trying not to make mistakes. Like, if you're trying too hard and you're thinking too much about trying not to make mistakes, you're going to make different mistakes, or you're going to play slow, and that's what was happening to him. DeMario had really strong words for him. He said, you know, he's improved about as much as you can from year one to year two. And, you know, he talked a bit about the mental health coach that he's been working with and the approach that he's been taking. And you can see it on the field. Like, you can see he's always been this kind of supreme athlete. Like, you look at him out there and he's like, yeah, that's an NFL linebacker, right? So what's been holding him back? And it's not physicality.
Right.
It's what's between the ears. So it sounds like, you know, he feels like he's in a much better place, and you can see that on game day.
Cullen, what Jeff is talking about here, let's jump to cut four, where Orji's talking about, you know, everybody wants to say, I'm going to move on after making a mistake, but it's not so easy when you're on the field. What really clicked for him to be able to do that?
I had a mental performance coach, Jana Genova. I think I said her name right. So we worked throughout this offseason. We had a lot of meetings just working on, like, my limiting beliefs, like trying to mitigate those and focusing on my empowerment beliefs and trying to keep those in the forefront, and getting a plan together for this training camp and this throughout the off season to make sure my mental's right. So she's helped me tremendously. So just keeping my mind right and being able to go, I call it playing out my mind, because I'm not thinking. So just going out there, be able to play out my mind and just go play ball.
Orji playing it out of his mind, saying.
Yeah, no, and you have to appreciate a young player who kind of understands that and can admit that about his own game and seeks some help in terms of maximizing that. So
Definitely appreciated how open he was talking about even just mental struggles, not just the physicality of the game.
Yeah, and a lot of times with these UDFAs, you don't know, you know, who's going to stick around, who's going to make an impact. So you don't hear from them as much in their rookie year as you might in year two. And he's a guy they kept around for a reason. Like, you really like his upside. He was a tackling machine at Vanderbilt. He can play all three linebacker spots. So, you know, he's a useful guy, and, you know, he's someone who you could expect to have a plus impact on special teams. So it makes sense. Because that's when you're talking about the fourth and fifth linebacker on a depth chart, a lot of times that's what it comes down to, is, okay, can you go down the field and make a tackle on special teams? That's why Andrew Dowell was kept around for those years prior to his ACL injury. That's why they brought him back. Right? Because you need guys who you trust to go out there and make a play, especially with this new kickoff rule that I'm still not entirely sure what to expect from. We haven't seen a ton of long
returns yet. I haven't gotten
used
to it either, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be – I don't know if we've seen kind of the full form of – but I don't think people are necessarily showing some of the more –
agreed, yeah.
Complex, you know, strategies they'll have.
They're just trying to get through the basics of it too, yeah, in the preseason.
They're just trying to figure out how to block and how to make a tackle and not fumble it, right? You know, get the kicker to put it in the right spot. I'm curious to see how many different types of kickoffs there are, you know, like stuff like that. Because we've seen, you know, I was watching Blake the other day, and he kicked four in a row, and there were four, like, distinct kicks. Like, one was higher, one was a line drive, one was kind of like a wobbler, like a knuckleball in the middle. Because you don't want to kick the guy the same kick every time. You want him to have to catch it at a standstill. Anyway, that's kind of off topic. But, I like the linebacker room a lot. I like the defense a lot. Like, I think you look up and down this defense, and outside of the strong safety spot, I don't have many questions. You know, there's one defensive starter right now that I'm not sure about out of 11. And if you're in that position going into a season, you feel pretty good about where you are. I'm not worried about the pass rush. I'm not worried about the linebackers. I'm not worried about the corners. I'm not worried about the slot corner. I'm not worried about Tyron. I'm not worried about the free safety.
Well,
right?
The only thing I am worried about with the corners is just the health of Marshawn Lattimore and that hip flexor.
Sure, health is a question, and Kool-Aid is also dealing with a knee injury right now, so that might impact how many corners you carry into the regular season.
Why do we have so many? Oh, because of injuries.
Right, because you're not sure. I think the hope is that those guys are ready for week one, so you're not trying to fill those spots with some of these younger guys, Rico Payton, Shamar John Charles, Rajon Wright, Jawan Williams, but it's been how long since Marshawn's been on the field? You'd like to be confident that he's going to be ready to go, but how can you say that right now?
I was going to say, do you recall on how far into camp it was that Marshawn got dinged?
It's like 4 or 5 days in. He did participate. He
right.
did get some work in, and he was there for mini camp, so you got part of it then. He doesn't need to learn defense, so that's not something that you're worried about. But it's a long time, and hips are kind of finicky.
They don't lie.
yeah, you're right.
Getting to back to some of our orgy sound on cut two, something that carried over now from the Sean Payton era is definitely do your job. Here's what Orgy had to say his mantra is.
If I do my job, the plays gonna come to me. That's what Hodges told me during camp. All the plays I make in camp is from doing my job. So games, I try to make it no different. Just go out there and play ball. Just do my job.
You mentioned there, he said Hodges, actually, linebackers coach Michael Hodges, who I think is one of those two that you look on this staff and you could see him ascending up the ranks to maybe D coordinator and even a head coach one day.
Yeah, what I'd like to see for him down the road is, play calling.
Right.
Right. Joe Woods has been calling plays this preseason. He called plays in the defensive plays in the Cardinals game. He called them in the second half against the 49ers, and he'll be calling the plays again today. That's something that D.A. let Ryan Nielsen do later in his coaching tenure when he was the defensive line coach and assistant defensive coordinator. That's something that as you go down the road, that's one of the questions. Can you call a defense? Can you put an entire defense together? And that's what makes it difficult to ascend from one of those position coaches to a full-fledged defensive coordinator. But, no, I think that he's a guy that everyone in that defensive room loves.
Exactly, right.
And I love him because he's one of the loudest guys, the loudest coaches on the field. And, anytime a linebacker makes a nice play, he, runs up and, yeah, go, Orgy, blah, blah, blah. So I never have to wonder who's making the tackle. He's always telling me because it can be tough to tell when you're standing on the sideline of a practice and you're like, I think that was that guy. And then I was like, oh, okay, Mike saw it. So that helps me make my own notes from the practice. But, no, he's a high-energy guy. He's been around for a while. It's not a coincidence that the Saints have a really good linebacker room every year, and you turn guys like Caden Ellis into big free agents. Even a Zach Bond, while he had a rough first couple of years, I think he really came on.
He got scooped up pretty quick in free agency.
Yeah, and in a scheme that fits his skill set more, I think he could have an impact. So, no, I think Hodges has done a really good job with these rooms.
And our last cut of Orgy, he talked more about his mindset on this team.
I feel like I'm just relaxing more. If you saw last year, I just got worse. People are supposed to get better throughout camp. You should look at me last year, I just got worse. OTAs, I was flying around doing my thing, training camp at the beginning. Oh, yeah, he's cool. And then it was just downhill. I just kept getting worse because, I just kept putting more pressure on myself. So it was just and it showed. Even my PFF score, whatever that is, someone told me it just kept getting lower and lower and lower. And you watch the film, it's like, man, this guy has no clue what he's doing. So right now I'm just trying to be relaxed out there and just play ball. That's my main focus, not to put too much pressure on it being the last preseason game or anything like that. Just an opportunity to play ball. So I'm going to go out there and do that.
So they do care about what you write about. He mentioned there their PFF score. That's Pro Football Focus for anyone that doesn't know, an analytics website that kind of breaks down players, games, all the time. And I know their values are often criticized, but overall, yeah. I really appreciate the info that you get from Pro Football Focus.
Well, most people do not have the time in the week to sit there and watch every single rep from every single player, right? That's what makes those valuable because they are doing that. That's what they do. So those scores at least give you a baseline of who they thought had a good game versus who you watched in real time. And sometimes it can show you this guy may have missed one play, and that's what we focused on because that's what they showed on the TV and that's what the replays they showed of this guy missing a tackle. But then if you look at the rest of the game, they were really solid. And that happens with offensive linemen all the time. Because you only see when they mess up, at least on the broadcast, right? You could have 99 good reps and then get beat clean on one, and the memory of that game for you will be that one mess up. So, you know, it's I don't think players typically stare at those scores and make a huge deal about them. I wouldn't be surprised if these guys go and you know, check those out occasionally. But DeMario Davis this week was funny because he was asked if he ever goes back and looks at his like pre-draft scouting report, and he was like, "It's funny you should ask that. I actually have it saved on my phone." And he pulled it up and started reading off of it, and he actually agreed with it. Like in the end, like he used it as kind of motivation for where
he did give the guy credit. Whoever broke this down knows his stuff. Like,
yeah, I don't even know who this guy is, but he was spot on because I fixed a lot of these things and turned these into strengths, but these were weaknesses at the time. So that kind of analysis can be valuable, but I think if you get too bogged down in it, it can eat you up. So I, to a certain extent, I think you need to kind of tune it out and just listen to what your coaches are telling you. But to say they're not aware of it at all, that's definitely not true.
We're here on First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Going to take a break. Be right back. Want to hear from you on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Where you at? Who dat? You coming to this preseason finale today? Give us a shout here on WWL. Right back after this. Back here on First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Want to give a shout out to our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We heading out to Jimmy and Gretna, who I know is heading to the game today. What you got for us today, Jim?
Look, last year I came to some games and I had to get a hall pass for my wife. Well, today's her birthday. I'm taking her to the game. All right, last year, let me tell you something. I had to wake up at 4 a.m. just to get that hall pass to go to the game without her. Put that flashlight on top of the lawnmower, cut grass all morning in the dark. All right, now, look, the commissioner's coming to the game today with me for her birthday. She's not a big Saints fan. But happy birthday, Leslie. We're going to the game. Look, they're $2 tickets, Steve and Jeff. Okay, $2 tickets right now in the secondary market. If you want to bring your whole family, this is the game. Middle of the day. I'm just saying, tickets are dirt cheap. All right, $2.
Did you spend more than $2 on your tickets today? I hope so.
No, I actually did because it's her birthday. But I'm saying, you know, for the people who are having economic issues, you guys go check it out for yourself. You want to go? There's still a lot
of
tickets left. It's going to be like 50,000 people in there. It's going to be real laid back. But as far as the Saints are concerned, and we know the Tulane running back, Tajay Spears, is coming back. Tennessee Titans, a guy who played with Tulane. And in some ways, I want to get your take on this, because as much as we give a hard time to Trevor Penning, which I think he's doing better from preseason game one to preseason game two, I hope he continues to get better today. I want to put the spotlight on this Kendra Miller deal, because as you watch us pass on Spears, we could have drafted Spears. He's done well with the Titans so far early in his career. I know they were worried about some injury, but I mean, we've gotten tenfold with the kid from TCU, Miller, and I want to get your take on that. As much heat as Penning gets, what's the deal with our running back, this Kendra Miller guy? What's the deal with this guy?
Yeah, there's them definitely, I think, plenty of Saints fans slash, you know, local folks that are upset the fact that they still passed on Spears to go with the Miller. But I don't really know if Tajay was a guy that really fit what the Saints were doing and were ever going to be someone that took him.
Well, I mean, people would seem to look at it and say, like, well, they clearly should have had a higher grade on Tajay and taken Tajay. And, you know, what I'll say is you scout these guys, and if you have a higher grade on somebody, that's who you draft. Right, like they're not setting a board and then at the last second being like, oh well, we just want to make our fans mad, so we're not going to take the Tulane kid because he's a Tulane kid. I think they had a lower grade on him, and so they took the guy they had a higher grade on. Now, keep in mind that was a different offense. Who was to say whether this staff in here now would have had the same input on Tajay versus Kendra and how he fit in this offense? You know, I get a kick out of when people say, well, they didn't draft Tajay because because of injury concerns. And I'm like, yeah, but Kendra was literally hurt when they drafted him.
Exactly.
So clearly injury concerns weren't the main factor. It was fit.
And you go even this year with Kool-Aid was dealing with injury when they
right.
drafted
they
him.
Right. They clearly
so
don't have
not the concern.
Just having an injury is, or like having injury history is not the deciding factor in a lot of these. But no, it's going to get frustrating. It's frustrating now, and it's only going to get more frustrating because, you know, I don't know if Tajay's going to play today, but you know, we're going to continue to see him play well. You know, and he's a guy that can run the ball. He can catch the ball. He's, you know, electric when he gets the ball in his hands. And, you know, the funny thing is you look at it and you say, hey, I've seen the same flashes out of Kendre. Like, we've seen good performances out of Kendre. The issue is he can't get on the field.
No, I think there was obviously that excitement last year, too, because he did it in the finale against the Falcons. You're like, all right, we got a guy that can help us, you know, defeat the Dirty Birds in years going forward.
It would honestly be less frustrating if he didn't do that. Like, it's more frustrating
that you saw it.
You saw the flashes of it, and then now it's just disappeared, right? If we felt like, oh, he just doesn't have the juice at all, then you'd be like, okay, move on. We'll find something. Like, it's a bad pick, but we'll move on. You look at it, and it's the same thing with Peyton Turner. Like, when Peyton Turner's got on the field, he's been a good quality player, right? He's made an impact, but he just can't stay on the field. Hopefully that changes this year for Peyton. He's been dealing with a toe injury, which is a little concerning considering he missed last year with a toe injury, basically, the entire season. He played in week 1 and week 18. He bookended the season. But, you know, it's – and I asked Jeff Ireland about this in terms of, you know, Peyton Turner, Marcus Davenport, right? Like, you look at this, and it's a situation where, okay, was the scouting – did the scouting lead you astray, or is there any way to really predict when a guy is going to deal with injuries? And he said, it's like, we don't know. Like, they feel like they still scouted the right players. They feel like you look at the metrics that they go for, you know, you look at the scouting points, the analysis points, and they were what they wanted. You just haven't been able to see whether that would have ever panned out with Peyton, honestly, for the most part with Marcus, and now with Kendre. So I don't even know if it's a situation where you look at it and you say, well, if they just adjust their scouting methods, they would have ended up with Tajay versus Kendre. Because I don't even know if those are wrong. It's just how it worked out. But I don't blame people for being frustrated about it, especially when you watch Tajay out there doing what we saw him capable of doing at Tulane in the NFL.
Folks, as we head to break, I want to remind you the New Orleans Saints partnered with Seaside Events to provide the Saints Nation with the ultimate fan experience. You can mingle with Saints legends during the inaugural Saints Legends Fan Cruise. We'll be right back after this break on First Take right here on WWL. Back here on First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. We are set up here at Gate B atrium level on floor 2. In the Caesars Superdome as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to kickoff coming up at 11 o'clock where you can meet up with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. I'm not even sure, Jeff, what time the gates open. Is it probably 11 o'clock here to get into the Superdome? It's open 10 a.m.
I would guess it is 11.
I guess I should have this information as well.
You know, do you know better than I do the people who are trying to get in the gate? I can't remember the last time I actually tried to get into a game like that, so that's not information I possess.
I want to give a shout-out to the Saints have left a spot in the press box where Ed Daniels, sports director for DSU, still
– Gino.
Gino, I'm sorry, still vacant after his passing. Some flowers are set up for Ed, and there will also be a moment of silence before today's game to honor him. I know a lot of tragedy has happened to the GSU family, too, as well. They had a sports director that ended up dying the next morning of Ed's funeral in a traffic accident, which was absolutely horrifying for them.
It's a brutal month for them, and just, you know, thoughts and prayers with them and all those people dealing with that. Yeah,
we're going to be back with more First Take after the break. Make sure you join us. It's brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Reward destination. Talk to you on the flip side of the top of the hour news right after this on WWL.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapper jacks.
Those aren't even the words. I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Welcome into First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars reward destination. That coffee at least starting to hit for me, Jeff.
I don't know, that intro feels like he gave a lot more effort on your name than he did on my name. Yeah, like
I'm like coming out the tunnel, high-fiving everybody.
Yeah, like you're Jordan, I'm Pippen here, but that's
just
fine.
As important, a key role player, obviously.
Sure, I don't think they're winning those titles, but anyway, that's neither here nor there.
We're here for preseason finale, game number three for the Black and Gold and for the Tennessee Titans, who will wrap things up here today in the Caesars Superdome. Obviously, everyone's happy for the end of preseason play as we get a week off next week in NFL action, at least, that mini bye week before action starts for the Black and Gold. Week one against the Carolina Panthers. And I don't know if you saw any of the highlights. Bryce Young having a pretty solid showing his final outing.
Are they highlights? I don't call it preseason highlight. Like, I just call it preseason stuff. Like, it's not – anyway. But, no, he had a touchdown pass, which, you know, hopefully that's the last one he throws for a few weeks. Because I don't
get a little confidence so he can just be dashed when he comes here.
Bryce is in an interesting situation, and I always feel like we go into year two with a number one overall pick, and everyone's decided, like, oh, Bryce isn't good. And it's like, how do you know that? How have you decided that already? You know, and it's strange because we were talking to Anthony Richardson in the break, and it's like everyone seems to have decided that Anthony Richardson is the answer.
He's like the next Mahomes.
It's just strange to me how quickly we come to these determinations of, like, yeah, the Panthers were hot garbage last year at every position. Like, why would you expect a quarterback to star in that scenario? And C.J. Stroud, I think, was in a much better position to succeed. And that's why, like, sometimes you talk about, oh, well, you know, well, we picked this guy number one, like, and C.J. goes number two. C.J., while he probably, you know, the cachet of going number one, the excitement of going number one is probably something he would have wanted, he ended up in a way better position than Bryce did. And we never talk about that. We never talk about the situation you're going to, as opposed to, like, well, he was always an undersized quarterback, and now we're seeing that. And it's – I don't know if that's why you watch him out there and he looks like a child playing among men. But that was always going to be the case. He's tiny. But, like, Kyler was the same way. Kyler won Rookie of the Year, and everyone decided Kyler's the answer. And now he has this massive contract. He hasn't done anything since. So we'll see with Bryce. I'm hopeful for Bryce.
I appreciated Cam Jordan's comments when he got interviewed by Kay Adams saying, little Bryce.
Little Bryce. He's little. He's a little guy.
looking at our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, talking about some quarterback situation from 0463 we got, Jeff. Good morning, guys. Love the early show. Michael from South Lafourche. What's y'all's opinion on the backup quarterback situation? I personally love Rattler.
Yeah, a lot of people love Rattler. There's a Rattler hive going on, you know, rattlesnake.
We've kind of talked about this. There's something about the guy's aura that people are latching onto.
I've gotten better at my Rattler sound effect. No, it's a rattle. It's good. There it is. But, yeah, you know, Rattler, you know, he's got great arm talent. And I think people get caught up in the arm talent, and they, especially when coming out of college, because there's just, like, arm talent at the college level is so important. You know, I would say, like, the way I always phrase it, like, at the college level, arm talent is like 60% of the equation. Everything's simpler. The defenses are simpler. The concepts you're running are simpler. You're asked to do a lot less. You're operating out of the shotgun almost exclusively. And then you get to the NFL, and it becomes everyone's got arm talent. Now, some people have a little better arm talent. Like, you talk about a Josh Allen. Like, his arm talent is elite, but that's not alone going to get you where you need to go. That becomes like 20-25% of the equation in the NFL, and it's a lot more about accuracy, but I put that with arm talent, right? It becomes more about where to go with the ball, understanding what the defense is doing. Everything's faster. You got to get stuff there on time. You got to get the ball out on time. Your footwork has to be
processing,
on point,
right?
You have to understand how to navigate the pocket, how to extend plays, when to extend plays, when to scramble. And one of the things that's bugged me with Rattler, and it's a criticism, but it's a young player criticism, is you get happy feet. And I've seen him a little bit too much. And you saw it in the 49ers game. That fumble, I think, was a product of he didn't trust the pocket around him. He tried to scramble. The scramble got cut off, and then he kind of got lost, and the ball got knocked out. And, you know, you look at the protection. The protection wasn't good. But that's just something that a young player has to learn, has to pick up. And that's why when I look at this scenario and you see a second-year player who looks a little bit more comfortable, who you're looking at and saying, if I had to pick one of these guys to be my backup, to go in, and I keep using this example, but it's the perfect example. You have a 17-0 lead, and you got to play the second half of this game. Which guy do I look at and say he has the better chance of going out and winning that game? Because that's important. That's the difference between the Saints.
Flashback last year to the Green Bay game, I guess.
Yeah, that's the reference, right? You go in, if you go and win that game, you're in the playoffs. You win 10 games. You host the Eagles. You probably win. You're talking about a team that might be in the divisional round of the playoffs versus a team that's saying, can we get back to the playoffs after 3 years out? Like, that's the difference. And so that's what you look at for the backup quarterback. You're not talking about who has the best chance to develop into a starter down the road. And I'd say it's Rattler, if that was the question. The question is, who do I trust more to go into a game and win it?
In an emergency situation, right.
Like, I always go back to Trevor Siemian. Like, Trevor Siemian is the most effective backup quarterback in terms of actually coming in and winning a game in relief that the Saints have had in a long time, because he did it twice in that year. He beat the Bucs in that game Jameis went down. He beat the Falcons in Week 18 in the game Taysom Hill started and went down in. And at the time, that got you to 9-8.
Trevor Siemian, the closer.
Yeah, and you thought, well, yeah, but like that's what you're looking at as a backup quarterback. Now, who is the better starter?
Gotcha.
That's a different question. The games he started, they lost. But you don't pick your backup quarterback based on, oh, if they have to start a game, will we win? Because I wouldn't be surprised if you say, hey, Jake Haener's our backup quarterback, and then if you get into a scenario where you have to start a guy, it becomes a different conversation. But so right now, when I look at Jake, I see a guy who's a little bit more confident, who seems to trust the offense a little bit more. And if I have to throw somebody into a very high-pressure scenario, I would prefer it to be him. And we'll see today, I think.
Right. This is going to be all about the Spencer Rattler, Jake Haener show today.
Yeah, and like last year in the finale, he threw, like, what, 2-3 interceptions. He was spamming Lucas Kroll the ball, and they eventually figured it out, and they started picking it off.
Kroll's in Denver now?
He was in Denver. I'm not sure if he's still there.
Yeah,
but that
you.
Is where he went with Sean Payton. So that's where I'm at right now. And you know, Spencer has had really, really nice moments. Like, if I had to pick, like, the top 10 throws of camp in terms of just – like, beautiful ball, beautiful touch, beautiful location. He'd probably have 6 of them, right? But it's not all about that. It's about processing. It's about, you know, being ready right now. And I don't think there's any shame in being able to say, hey, he's not ready to start at the NFL level right now. He's not the guy that you would have the backup at,
as
the backup.
Wasn't expected to ever.
Well, I mean, I think that you do have high expectations for him. And
sure.
You feel like, you know, talking about a guy you drafted in the 5th round and being able to say at this point, still, hey, I could see him being a starter at the NFL level. I never said that about Ian Book, right? You know, I don't think anyone ever said that about Garrett Grayson,
right?
Guys like that.
Definitely
so
not.
Even by those standards, I think he's ahead of the curve. And I think if you're the Saints, you have the luxury of actually having a dude in his second year who, you know, I don't want to throw a rookie in there and have him completely torpedo any confidence he's been able to gain, because he's behind a struggling offensive line. He's in an offense that I wouldn't say is loaded with playmakers. Now, with Jake, I'm not saying you throw him to the wolves, but I feel better about him being able to navigate that. So that's where I'm at in the backup conversation.
To me, I think a lot of folks are getting way too hyped, though, over they consider Spencer Rattler this more mobile option.
He is the more mobile option.
Over Haener, I think they're both kind of... They are mobile, but no one's really looking to tuck and run it.
Yeah, I'd say Jake's mobility is more along the lines of Derek's mobility, in that, like, I think their reason that they're not unathletic people, but they're not looking to run.
Right.
I think with Spencer, you see a little bit more of the, hey, I can actually get out and run the ball and pick up positive yardage. You saw it against the Cardinals.
On the touchdown, right.
Yeah, so, like, I don't think Jake or Derek is scoring a touchdown in that scenario, to put it that way. So, you know, in that sense, yes, he can generate a little bit more with his legs, but – I sometimes wonder if it's the best option in the, some of the scenarios that he's running. And anytime I see a quarterback scrambling in training camp at a high level, I look at that as a negative, because I want to see in camp, I want to see you go through your progressions, I want to see you work through the offense. And scrambling in a practice where they can't hit you just feels cheap, in my opinion. And I don't know. I've always felt that way. I felt that way when Taysom was competing for the job. And it's like, yeah, Taysom in a game would run here, but I don't. I know he can run. I don't need you to prove to me you can run. I need you to prove to me that you can run the offense. And I think there's a difference there.
Looking at this quarterback situation, is there any instance, probably not today, but obviously during the season, where Taysom Hill gets some snaps, and not just in those gadgety packages.
Taysom. I love me some Taysom. Happy birthday, by the way.
Today?
It was on Friday. They sang him happy birthday on the field at the end of practice. Taysom, we've seen a good number of quarterback reps from him in camp. They've mostly been runs. And a few of them have been in the red zone, which I found interesting, because I would think that you would, if you're going to try to fool somebody with a Taysom QB rep, it wouldn't be in the red zone when they're already giving you their heavy personnel anyway. But
I guess it's kind of like the tush push. Go ahead and stop it. We dare you.
Yeah, I think we've gone back to early Taysom to some extent, like 2017 Taysom, where if he's throwing a pass, it's going to be a complete misdirection. Like, you're trying to catch him in a heavy look, as opposed to the last couple of years where it's been a little bit more, you know, designed. The question for me is with Taysom, and we've seen it this year more than any other year, does he wear two gloves or does he wear one glove? Because there's been times that I've seen him drop balls that I'm just like, if he was wearing two gloves, I think he catches that, you know? And but I don't think he likes to throw with a glove on. So does it become a tell if you're saying, oh, he's going to
see him?
Yeah, well, if he goes out there with one glove, wouldn't you be like, hey, this is a he's going to throw.
It's a passing play,
you
right?
You know, so we're going to be alert for the throw. And I've never seen him necessarily working on throwing with a glove on. So I don't know. It's a stupid thing, but it's also like, if you're going to have him throw passes and you have him run out there with two gloves, wouldn't that be a tell that he can't – that he's going to not throw because he has to – anyway, I don't know how they're going to work that in. But he's going to get a lot of action, and I think he's going to get used at the quarterback spot, just maybe not as – extensively as we've seen in the past. I think he's going to get more handoffs this year than we've ever seen.
Yeah, we've been basically seeing a lot of that fullback position out of Taysom.
Yeah, tosses, handoffs, motion where he gets the ball. Like, you're going to get him the ball. I just think it's going to look a little different this year than maybe that kind of straightforward QB power. And they're still going to run QB power, but I just don't think you're going to see it nearly as often.
When we get back from the break, we're going to get into some of our sound from tight end Foster Moreau. Well, I figure we might say a few snaps from him in this game. Question, though, as we head to break, Jeff, what about Juwan Johnson? I know we talked about it a little bit before we went on air, but will we see him get some reps as he's returning back from injury? Is there kind of still too soon to get him into game action?
Juwan?
Yeah.
I would be surprised, but I wouldn't hate it. You know, I think he's ready to get out there and maybe get a couple plays in. But if we do see him, it would be not a lot.
Going to take a break. When we get back from First Take, we'll get into that sound of Foster Moreau, the tight end. We're here on the Harrah's New Orleans Caesars Rewards Destination First Take Show. Be back right after this on WWL. Back here on First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards Destination. We are in the Caesars Superdome right now, getting ready for the countdown to kickoff. Coming up with the Cajun Cannon, you can see us at Gate B in the atrium level. Make sure you stop by, say hey. We had a little difficulty finding our spot this morning, but we made it.
We just need to move on, Steve. We're here now.
I know. I can't get over it because I was making fun of Bobby, who needs help getting to our area, and I was like, I ended up – we, like, did, like, a whole loop around
but
the dome.
You say help. It's not like he gets – like, he just needs someone to lead him.
Yeah, he puts their hand
on
Patrick's
shoulder.
He walks
here under his own power. Yeah, he doesn't, like, need to get blindfolded. But he'll get here. He'll get here just like we got here.
Getting to our sound now for this hour. Tight end Foster Moreau recently spoke to the Saints media, and you really found out he was dealing with a pretty serious ankle injury going into the season last year.
Yeah, that's what he talked about.
Especially, you know, printed ankle brace.
Yeah, like a 3D printed ankle brace. And, you know, it's funny. Sometimes we just, you know, we don't even talk about it. Like, yeah, but he was dealing with an ankle injury, and I think most people kind of assumed, well, that just got better. and he's playing now because he's healthy. And it's like, no, he just found a way to play through it, right? Like he said, a lot of times people wouldn't play through that ankle injury, but they got creative and it wasn't even necessarily a brace so much as it was kind of like an insert that they would put in there, and they would like tape it up really tight. And it was just a way to get it so like the tendon wouldn't like kind of snap over into a spot it wasn't supposed to be. Like, really, that's what he was dealing with. So, you know, if you watched him last year and you were like, man, he doesn't look as mobile as I remember, it's probably because he wasn't, because he was dealing with that. And, you know, it's just funny because you don't necessarily find out about that stuff until long down the road, and he had a surgery in January to fix it. And now he's kind of back where he wants to be. But, yeah, assume when you're watching a game in like week 12, like 80% of the roster is dealing with something that they have to manage throughout the week.
A guy from, you know, attended Jesuit, then goes to LSU, and now his career has brought him here to the New Orleans Saints. So definitely a guy that fans are a favorite of. Morrow talked about balancing the concern of personal health with his desire to play for his teammates.
Everyone has a different answer, right? For me, this game's given me everything I've ever had. And I have to repay it in any possible way that I can. And, you know, even when I was back in Vegas with the Raiders, you know, I'd consider it, there's anywhere from 55 to 70,000 people are going to come and pay to watch you play football on a daily basis. And that's nothing that I ever could have dreamed of when I was 12 years old. You know, you go back to the old XFL, the XFL quarterback, I forget his name, but asking himself two questions like, all right, question one, do I have a pulse? Yes. Question two, am I alive and active on game day? Yes. Okay, so let's go play football. It's not necessarily to that demeanor, but if I'm healthy, I'm playing. And if I could run, I'll play.
Yeah, Foster Moreau there, basically a guy that loves the game of football, appreciates where he's gotten to in the game, and all those opportunities, you know, that you're on a time clock, obviously, in the league, and he wants to make the best of it. You totally appreciate having a dude like that around.
Yeah, so the guy he's quoting is Jeff Brohm, who is actually, you know, he was head coach at Purdue, and now he's head coach at Louisville.
Right.
And that was from, the old XFL, the he hate me XFL days, which that was a wild time. But, no, and I think that's, you know, when – and one of the other questions he was asked, if that ever creates friction, he said, like, everyone has their own answer. And, okay, what if that answer – someone else's answer doesn't match up with your answer of, like, exactly how much should you play through and what's reasonable to play through? And he said, you know, it doesn't necessarily cause friction in the locker room. Like – because everyone appreciates, like, everyone's working hard. Everyone's doing what they can. But I do think, to some extent, there is a level of expectation of, hey, yeah, you're hurt, but everyone's dealing with stuff.
Something.
You mentioned, like, there's going to be several players out on the field today. You know, a guy like Mason Tipton, I wonder if he's going to be out there. He's been dealing with a hamstring injury.
I'd sure like to see him.
It's tough to put him on the roster without him appearing in a preseason game. And he's a guy who was shining early in camp. And at that point, I think I did have him on one of my early projections. Then he wasn't able to go against the Cardinals. He wasn't able to go against the 49ers. And if he doesn't get out there today, I don't know if you really can make that decision. And he might end up on the practice squad if you can't show anything. And so, you know, is he going to try to play through something? We'll see. But, you know, I think there's going to be several players out there today dealing with something. But putting good tape out is more important to them than being comfortable. And that's something that's not everyone deals with the same way.
Obviously, Morrow playing with Carr in those Raiders days, he has a lot of familiarity with the quarterback, good relationship with him. One of the things he was asked to was about Derek Carr, year two in New Orleans, and also the fan sentiment.
I mean, it's complicated, right? It's complicated. And I've been just about everywhere as a Saints fan through my entire life, right? From as early as I can remember, it was Aaron Brooks, but, you know, as late as I can remember, obviously, it was Drew. And it's hard because there's an extremely high level of expectation, so accountability has to be up. And I do believe this year that our accountability is up. So it'll be interesting to see how we respond. But I think Derek looks great. I think he's had a great camp. I think most all of my teammates would echo that sentiment, and I'm excited to watch us work.
Foster Moreau talking about Derek Carr year two here in New Orleans. And, yeah, I know Bobby Hebert always says you never want to be the man replacing the man. And I guess lucky for Carr, he kind of comes in after Jameis Winston, really. But for some reason, the Saints Nation has this love affair with him.
No, I don't think he's – I think he's still in that –
the shadow of Brees.
You never really got a full season out of Jameis to say he was the guy that got held up to Drew. And yeah. Even Andy, like, he was kind of a halfway season. He was never installed as
– the guy. Know,
if we got through the entirety of the 2021 season and Jameis started all 17 games and you had a you could say, like, this was a full dose of Jameis – then I think that we might be able to say that he kind of took that, you know, that bullet for the next quarterback,
yeah,
who isn't going to be compared to Drew. He's going to be compared to Jameis. We didn't get that. We never got that with Jameis in 2021. We never got that with him in 2022 because we got a lot of Andy Dalton. So it really became, okay, the first guy you really brought in as the guy, right? Because Jameis was here in advance. He was studying behind Drew, and you thought, hey, maybe he can take over. And so, no, I think Derek is that guy. And that's a big part of why his first year was looked at so critically. And he did struggle at points. But he also was really, really good at points, especially toward the end of the season. But it does feel like he has not won over a lot of people yet. And you got to win. Like, that's at the end of the day, you got to go out there and win. You got to go to the playoffs. You got to prove that it's not just another season of, okay, we're just going to kind of float in the middle of the pack and not ever really be excited about anything. You got to do something. You got to string wins together. You got to have a calling card moment. And if he can do that, I think he'll win some people over. But until you can do that, it's going to be the same. You're going to kind of get that, you know, it's not confidence. It's like the confidence in the opposite direction. It's confidence that things won't go well. That even if you start 2-0, they started 2-0 last year. Like, that should be like,
you would never guess that, right?
I mean, like, they never do that. You know, like, this is a team that almost always has a bad loss in the first 2 to 3 games. So even during the peak Sean Payton years, you almost always had that bad loss. I think back to Ryan Fitzpatrick in Tampa, right? Like, L.A. In week 2 when Brees got hurt, they still, right, you know, won a bunch of games, went to the playoffs that year. And so you had confidence, even after those slow starts, that they could turn things around and get to the postseason. It's the opposite now, where you could get out to a 3-0 start, and you're still kind of looking over your shoulder, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Mm-hmm. And until you can prove that that's not going to happen every year, you're going to get a lot of hesitancy to commit fully to that situation. So it's at the end of the day, you got to win. And that's where I think Derek is right now.
We always hear guys talking about accountability.
Yeah.
Accountability, a big factor, obviously, when it comes to team play, in the locker room, on the field. And it seems that Morrow might have one of the bigger voices on the team when it comes to that. He was asked, are you this team's accountability enforcer?
I think I'm just the loudest, I'll be honest. That's what DA would tell me. But I don't know. There's plenty of guys who shed tons of accountability on people. I just have a little bit of knowledge, and it'd be I'd be remiss if I didn't try to share it, because I love these guys and I care a lot about these guys, and I want us to be great, and I want us to win a lot of games. And it doesn't happen if someone isn't holding someone accountable. So if it's me, it's me sometimes, right? And I don't really like being that guy, because I love everyone, but sometimes you get a little red ass.
Sometimes you get a little red ass, Jeff.
I've never heard that
happens on the air,
too. Is that a saying? I don't know if I've ever heard
that.
Yeah,
a little.
Yeah, but hey.
One thing I noticed when Morrow showed up, it was like, even in the locker room, right away, I felt like his presence was there, his personality, very loud, boisterous, was making even messing with the lights, turning on and off. It was just surprising for someone that had just arrived to the team.
He's a character.
Yes,
for
sure.
There's no question. But I think there's a difference between being a character and being a leader. And I'm not saying Foster's not a leader, but I do think that the Saints team, the Saints roster, one of, you know, if you're looking for reasons to say, okay, why should we be confident despite, you know, all the national pundits saying, oh, there's not enough talent, there's whatever. And it's, you know, one big thing they have in their corner is basically in every room on this team and every position group, you have a really strong leadership type player, right? In the defensive end group, you have Cam Jordan. In the linebacker room, you have DeMario Davis. In the safety room, you have Tyrann Mathieu.
It's pretty unbelievable, those three right there.
In the running back room, you have Alvin Kamara. You know, in the tight end room, you have Taysom Hill. I kind of still look at him as a tight end, but and Foster, who I do think is a good accountability type guy, right? And so, you know, I think that benefits
McCoy's
you as a team.
Kind of turned that dude on the offensive line
group. You have Eric McCoy, who I think is really taking a step forward. So, you know, I think that's the type of thing that when you know, you could look at if you look at a Madden roster and you see like, wow, why are the Saints rated lower than I feel like they should be? They feel like they are going to win more games than maybe that number would indicate. It's because when you have leadership like that, it helps you, you know, the sum of your parts, right? It helps you outperform what might on paper not look like the best roster in the NFL, right? So I think that's what you're hoping is the case, and the accountability is a part of that. You know, that's why you go to Irvine. Now, part of that's getting out of the heat, but part of that is kind of the bonding, that the team chemistry that you're able to generate by kind of sending everyone off on their own, putting them in hotel rooms, giving them nothing really to do but to be together and work on stuff and like become closer as a team. And, you know, that's something that has to manifest on game day. And if it does, hey, maybe you can win a couple games that otherwise might have gone the other way because you're able to find that extra gear. You know, but sometimes that's, you know, you could say that. It's really easy to say that.
Yeah.
And it's a lot harder to actually put that into practice.
I know that you weren't out with the team for the West Virginia days, but I got to imagine being sequestered out in L.A. is a lot better than West Virginia.
I have no frame of reference. I imagine it is. I mean, the weather is probably similar. I don't know what it probably rained a little bit more in West Virginia than it did in California.
We got a few rain days, but yeah. It was waking up in the morning, very cool, comfortable temperatures.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more to do, generally speaking,
exactly,
than there would have been
right.
in West Virginia.
Maybe more to get in trouble with, too.
Probably ate fewer Subway sandwiches than you did. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, hopefully that manifests into something. Now, do they do that again if it worked? That's a question. But I think that's a happy problem to have if it ends up being because you won 11, 12 games and went to the playoffs.
I think we've heard from a ton of people, though, that the plan is going forward to be back in Metairie for next season's training camp, not to be in a destination.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to just go to California just to go to California. They also, next year, you're going to have one road preseason game and two home preseason games.
Right.
Whereas this year you had two road preseason games, so that allowed
made a little sense there.
So I think a scenario where, hey, we have the first preseason game on the road, maybe they give you LA, the Rams or the Chargers, and maybe you start camp out there, and then you finish camp here, kind of like they did this year, but with the next, like, instead of staying out there for that second week, you come back after the road game. After, you know, the Cardinals game, you would have come home.
Yeah.
I think that's a scenario that might make sense because you're taking advantage of the facility, your own facility, a lot more than maybe you did this year. I don't think you're going to – you know, 28 days, that's too long, I think, for any team. That's just – I think it wears on you after a while, and that last week felt like, you know, from my perspective, and I'm sure the players felt like – Jamal Williams definitely felt that way. it drags on a little bit because you feel like you got the work that you needed to get done, and now it's like, okay, let's get ready for the season. But, you know, if they lose 10 games, then no way they're doing it again.
That all-important thing, winning, the importance of winning. Mora was asked, how important is a successful season this year for the team and for head coach Dennis Allen?
Obviously, there is a lot of noise, and again, back to expectations. We're a good football team with a good roster, with experienced players, and we need to make the playoffs, and we need to make a push in the playoffs, right? So good enough is never really truly good enough. So you could have a winning season all you want. You could have all these accolades and all these stats and all these Pro Bowlers, but there's one winner in this league, and then there's a whole lot of losers, right? And you could do that as long as you want. But for us, we're trying to win. We're trying to win now. That is apparent and obvious to everyone.
Yeah, and what do you know, the good old Super Bowl right here in New Orleans this year. I don't think anybody has this team even penciled in as a contender for it, but the guys in the locker room don't want to hear any of that or believe that. They have Super Bowl aspirations, obviously.
I think the guys in the locker room have them penciled in for that.
Yeah.
I don't know how you go into a season and not at least believe, hey, we are going to do this.
We got a chance.
Right, and because if you go in already defeated, then what's the point of playing the games at all? But no, I mean, here's the thing. When it comes to the NFL, Everyone likes to pretend they have all the answers, and like I can look at this roster and know exactly how many games they're going to win. And you know, Jeff Duncan from NOAA.com, he always does a survey before the season every year. And my issue of like when I answer that question is I have to balance how many games do I think they can win,
right? The optimism.
And how many games do I think they will win,
right?
Because I think that's a very significant difference of like. If everything goes right, I think this team can win double-digit games. I think they can get to the playoffs. Now, what happens if you have injuries at key positions? What if the timing of your season creates a few schedule losses where, oh, well, you know, we would have won this game if it was on a Sunday, but we played it on a Thursday, and this person wasn't able to get back in time? And that sort of thing, like, oh, there was a, you know, a fumble at the goal line of this, like the Falcons game last year, right? If Taysom Hill doesn't get that ball punched out at the goal line, do they win it? Probably, right? So it all comes down to these really tiny moments and swings of momentum that you just can't predict in advance. And so much of it is luck. So much of it is guessing. Do the Saints win a Super Bowl if Brett Favre doesn't throw the ball back across the field right into Tracy Porter's arms? I don't know, but that's not something the Saints could have controlled. They benefited from it. So there is such an element of randomness. And can this team get to the Super Bowl? Yeah, it's tough. I wouldn't bet on it, but can it happen? Sure. Now, you got to get to the playoffs first. And I think that's the first step. Once you get there, anything can happen. I watched the Giants win two Super Bowls on the strength of a pass rush and Eli Manning blacking out and having the games of his life, right? Like, can this team do that? I don't know. But they are built similarly to those Giants teams. I'll put it that way.
We are inside the dome, folks. Gate B, Loge level set up here, getting ready for the countdown, the kickoff coming up at 11 o'clock with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, presented by Craig's Electrical Generator Service. Great spot inside the atrium. Come see us for show before you make your way to the seats. We're going to take a break. Be back with more First Take brought to you by the Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination, right after this on WWL. We are back here on First Take brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. And what do you know, Jeff? We are also stationed here on Gate B in the atrium.
A lot of
Caesars Rewards Lounge.
A lot of Caesars. The Caesars building, and they make you aware of it.
Looking at our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, Jeff Zian from 1413 morning. I've been following the Saints since 1967. Good and bad, I have the Saints this year at 7 wins and 10 losses. The reason for this is because of penalties. Until the upper management of the Saints stop and do something about penalties, they'll never make the playoffs. I see 4 games they should have won to get them to 11-6 season, but they'll end up a 7-10 season. Joe from Biloxi. Well, I don't know if upper management's penalties in charge of the penalty.
Yeah, that's a tough one to put on management. Yeah, because like, how do you
coaching?
You know,
sure.
Yeah, coach. Yeah, we could put that on the coaching all day. I'm just not sure what the upper management can do about penalties. But I mean, penalties are an issue, right? That was one thing that, you know, the offensive line, Foster Moreau excluded, which he had a really funny quote that we can't play without some editing.
What's funny is, yeah, when we got to that audio, I'm like, do I have that clip and did I put the bleep in?
Yeah, right. I'm afraid to play it just in case this is the one I forgot to bleep.
Yes.
But, you know, he had a funny clip because, you know, that 95-yard touchdown drive, you know, it was really valuable for this offense, but it was especially for him because he's the one who jumped off sides on the first play of the game against the 49ers. And, you know, that when you start a drive first and 15 – this is not the offense that's going to overcome that.
Just like with record, you want to win right off the bat. When you get a penalty right away, you're digging a hole.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, sure, you're going to overcome that sometimes, but like if you constantly are behind the chains, it's just setting yourself up for failure, especially when you're deep in your own territory like they were to start that drive. So, no, penalties are an issue, but I actually thought throughout the course of that 49ers game, one of the things I was encouraged by was there weren't a ton of penalties, at least not on the first team offense. Like you didn't see holding, you didn't see you know, whatever, procedural stuff.
Yeah, right.
So when you can play a clean game, your life gets a lot easier. When you can avoid turnovers, your life gets a lot easier, right? So can you be that better coached team? Can you be that tighter team that doesn't make those silly mistakes?
And from game one to game two, you saw a definitely improvement right off the bat there.
Procedurally, yes, yeah. No question. And I think that's part of the reason you want to continue to get these young guys reps. Because, you know, we haven't talked much about Talley Fuaga, right? Like, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, okay, you have a rookie left tackle. That's going to be a concern. And it's because he's looked really solid. But, you know, once you get into the games, I'm not sure. I feel like I know what to expect, but you know, that's a big step up from Oregon State, right? Suddenly you're playing the Panthers on – on Sunday, and is he, how does he react to that? Are there going to be rookie mistakes? Is that going to be something that you have to watch throughout the course of the season? And we've spent all offseason looking at the other side of the line, and Trevor Penning, and what happens with there. We haven't really talked about it much today, but he's been splitting reps with Ole Udo in practice this week, first team reps. First time that's happened, and it's now become kind of a competitive situation. I still expect to see Trevor out there week one starting. I expect to see him out there with the ones today.
Right, it's still his to lose.
I think, yeah, but I think it's a sign that, hey, we are preparing for a scenario that if we have to take Trevor out, we have to do something else. We have that guy ready. So, you know, and part of the reason is, hey, you just can't get it done, right? You can't protect the quarterback without committing a penalty. You can't be trusted over there on an island. We have to constantly be sending help your way. And to be fair, Udo's not a slam dunk either at that spot, but he is a veteran who you probably have a little bit more confidence in to not be overwhelmed in that spot. And I think that's something that until the game start, you just don't know. You don't know how it's going to look. And so we'll have to see. But, yeah, if you can avoid penalties, if those guys can play clean, even if they get beat and some plays get blown up, like, I think you're in a much better spot.
I want to remind folks, the New Orleans Saints have partnered with Seaside Events to provide the New Orleans Saints Nation with the ultimate fan experience. You can mingle with Saints legends during the inaugural Saints Legends Fans Cruise. Make sure you check it out. We'll be back with more First Take that you can check out right here on WWL. Back here to wrap up First Take that's brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Coming up, the Cajun Cannon on the countdown, the kickoff. Right here, you want to stop by, be sure to check us out. We are Gate B, atrium level. On the lowest level,
some
engagement.
People in the building.
Yeah, so gates had to have opened
gates have
at
opened.
11 o'clock.
Or they
sure.
snuck in, one of those two things.
They've got the special secret media passes that we have.
Don't say that.
What's going to be fun, too, you see all these additions to the Caesar Superdome. We mentioned it too, the host city this year for the Super Bowl. Obviously, exciting times. Got to be around for the Baltimore-San Francisco one where the lights went out. But definitely looking forward to seeing how things shake out this year.
Had to bring that up.
Everybody equates that Super Bowl to what happened that year.
Well, I think, you know, we haven't talked much about it today. We talked about it a little at the open. Like, this renovation has been going on for, like, 4 years. Like, the people in this building have been working very, very hard to get this building ready to host the Super Bowl. And they, from what I can see, we didn't have time to go on the tour that the media took because we had to go and host Sports Talk after the practice on Friday. But from what I've seen, it looks fantastic. And they seem to have done a great job. Now, the streets outside... Well,
that's a different story.
We can't talk to...
that's not the Dome's fault.
I thought maybe they would have had the schedule. It seems like they took it as, oh, the Super Bowl's in February. We'll have it done by February. We're not really worried about the season. But, you know, I think that this stadium looks great. They did a great job on it.
Like I said, coming up next on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network, the countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Can't wait to hear his take on the preseason finale for Steve. Back here on First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. We are in the Caesars Superdome right now, getting ready for the countdown to kickoff. Coming up with the Cajun Cannon, you can see us at Gate B in the atrium level. Make sure you stop by, say hey. We had a little difficulty finding our spot this morning, but we made it.
We just need to move on, Steve. We're here now.
I know. I can't get over it because I was making fun of Bobby, who needs help getting to our area, and I was like, I ended up... We, like, did, like, a whole loop around
but
the dome.
You say help. It's not like he gets, like, he just needs someone to lead him.
Yeah, he puts their hand on
He walks here
on his
own, under his own power. Yeah, he doesn't, like, need to get blindfolded. But he'll get here. He'll get here, just like we got here.
Getting to our sound now for this hour. Tight end Foster Moreau recently spoke to the Saints media, and you really found out he was dealing with a pretty serious ankle injury going into the season last year.
Yeah, that's what he talked about.
Especially printed ankle brace.
Yeah, like a 3D printed ankle brace. And, you know, it's funny. Sometimes we just, you know, we don't even talk about it. Like, yeah, but he was dealing with an ankle injury, and I think most people kind of assumed, well, it just got better. And he's playing now because he's healthy. And it's like, no, he just found a way to play through it, right? Like he said, a lot of times people wouldn't play through that ankle injury, but they got creative and it wasn't even necessarily a brace so much as it was kind of like an insert that they would put in there and they would like tape it up really tight. And it was just a way to get it so like the tendon wouldn't like kind of snap over into a spot it wasn't supposed to be. Like, really, that's like that's what he was dealing with. So, you know, if you watched him last year and you were like, man, he doesn't look as mobile as I remember, it's probably because he wasn't, because he was dealing with that. And, you know, it's just funny because you don't necessarily find out about that stuff until long down the road, and he had a surgery in January to fix it. And now he's kind of back where he wants to be. But, yeah, assume when you're watching a game in, like, week 12 – that like 80% of the roster is dealing with something that they have to manage throughout the week.
Guy from, you know, attended Jesuit, then goes to LSU, and now his career has brought him here to the New Orleans Saints. So definitely a guy that fans are a favorite of. Morrow talked about balancing the concern of personal health with his desire to play for his teammates.
Everyone has a different answer, right? But for me, this game's given me everything I've ever had. And I have to repay it in any possible way that I can. And, you know, even when I was back in Vegas with the Raiders, you know, I'd consider it, there's anywhere from 55 to 70,000 people are going to come and pay to watch you play football on a daily basis. And that's nothing that I ever could have dreamed of when I was 12 years old. So, you know, you go back to the old XFL quarterback, I forget his name, but asking himself two questions like, all right, question one, do I have a pulse? Yes. Question two, am I alive and active on game day? Yes. Okay, so let's go play football. It's not necessarily to that demeanor, but if I'm healthy, I'm playing. And if I could run, I'll play.
Yeah, Foster Moreau there, basically a guy that loves the game of football, appreciates where he's gotten to in the game, and all those opportunities, you know, that you're on a time clock, obviously, in the league, and he wants to make the best of it. You totally appreciate having a dude like that around.
Yeah, so the guy he's quoting is Jeff Brohm, who is actually, you know, he was head coach at Purdue, and now he's a head coach at Louisville.
Right.
And that was from, yeah, the old XFL, the he hate me XFL days, which that was a wild time. But, no, and I think that's, you know, when, and one of the other questions he was asked, if that ever creates friction, he said, like, everyone has their own answer, and, okay, what if that answer, someone else's answer doesn't match up with your answer of, like, exactly how much should you play through,
yeah,
and what's reasonable to play through? And he said, you know, it doesn't necessarily cause friction in the locker room. Like, because everyone appreciates, like, everyone's working hard, everyone's doing what they can. But I do think to some extent there is a level of expectation of, hey, yeah, you're hurt, but everyone's dealing with stuff.
Something.
You mentioned, like, there's going to be several players out on the field today. You know, a guy like Mason Tipton, I wonder if he's going to be out there. He's been dealing with a hamstring injury.
I'd sure like to see him.
It's tough to put him on the roster without him appearing in a preseason game. And he's a guy who was shining early in camp. And at that point, I think I did have him on one of my early projections. Then he wasn't able to go against the Cardinals. He wasn't able to go against the 49ers. And if he doesn't get out there today, I don't know if you really can make that decision. And he might end up on the practice squad if you can't show anything. And so, you know, is he going to try to play through something? We'll see. But, you know, I think there's going to be several players out there today dealing with something. But the putting good tape out is more important to them than being comfortable. And that's something that's not everyone deals with the same way.
Obviously, Morrow playing with Carr in those Raiders days, he has a lot of familiarity with the quarterback, good relationship with him. One of the things he was asked to was about Derek Carr, year two in New Orleans, and also the fan sentiment.
I mean, it's complicated, right? It's complicated. And I've been just about everywhere as a Saints fan through my entire life, right? From as early as I can remember, it was Aaron Brooks, but, you know, as late as I can remember, obviously, it was Drew. And it's hard because there's an extremely high level of expectation, so accountability has to be up. And I do believe this year that our accountability is up. So it'll be interesting to see how we respond. But I think Derek looks great. I think he's had a great camp. I think most all of my teammates would echo that sentiment, and I'm excited to watch us work.
Foster Moreau talking about Derek Carr year two here in New Orleans. And yeah, I know Bobby Hebert always says you never want to be the man replacing the man, and I guess lucky for Carr, he kind of comes in after Jameis Winston, really, but for some reason the Saints Nation has this love affair with him.
No, I don't think he's – I think he's still in that
– the shadow of Brees.
You never really got a full season out of Jameis to say he was the guy that got held up to Drew and even Andy. Like, he was kind of a halfway season. He was never installed as
the
guy. If we got through the entirety of the 2021 season and Jameis started all 17 games and you had a you could say like this was a full dose of Jameis, then I think that we might be able to say that he kind of took that, you know, that bullet for the next quarterback who isn't going to be compared to Drew. He's going to be compared to Jameis. We didn't get that. We never got that with Jameis in 2021. We never got that with him in 2022 because we got a lot of Andy Dalton. So it really became, okay, the first guy you really brought in as the guy, right? Because Jameis was here in advance. He was studying behind Drew, and you thought, hey, maybe he can take over. And so, no, I think Derek is that guy. And that's a big part of why his first year was looked at so critically. And he did struggle at points. But he also was really, really good at points, especially toward the end of the season. But it does feel like he has not won over a lot of people yet. And you got to win. Like, that's at the end of the day, you got to go out there and win. You got to go to the playoffs. You got to prove that it's not just another season of, okay, we're just going to kind of float in the middle of the pack and not ever really be excited about anything. You got to do something. You got to string wins together. You got to have a calling card moment. And if he can do that, I think he'll win some people over. But until you can do that, it's going to be the same. You're going to kind of get that, you know, it's not confidence. It's like the confidence in the opposite direction. It's confidence that things won't go well. That even if you start 2-0, they started 2-0 last year. Like, that should be like,
if you would never guess that, right?
I mean, like, they never do that. You know, like, this is a team that almost always has a bad loss in the first 2 to 3 games. Even during the peak Sean Payton years, you almost always had that bad loss. I think back to Ryan Fitzpatrick in Tampa, right? Like, L.A. In week 2 when Breeze got hurt, they still, you know, won a bunch of games, went to the playoffs that year. And so you had confidence, even after those slow starts, that they could turn things around and get to the postseason. It's the opposite now, where you could get out to a 3-0 start, and you're still kind of looking over your shoulder, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And until you can prove that that's not going to happen every year, you're going to get a lot of hesitancy to commit fully to that situation. So it's at the end of the day, you got to win. And that's where I think Derek is right now.
We always hear guys talking about accountability.
Yeah.
Accountability, a big factor, obviously, when it comes to team play, in the locker room, on the field. And it seems that Morrow might have one of the bigger voices on the team when it comes to that. He was asked, are you this team's accountability enforcer?
I think I'm just the loudest, I'll be honest. That's what DA would tell me. But I don't know. There's plenty of guys who shed tons of accountability on people. I just have a little bit of knowledge, and I'd be remiss if I didn't try to share it, because I love these guys and I care a lot about these guys, and I want us to be great and I want us to win a lot of games. And it doesn't happen if someone isn't holding someone accountable. So if it's me, it's me sometimes, right? And I don't really like being that guy because I love everyone, but sometimes you get a little red ass.
Sometimes you get a little red ass, Jeff.
I've never heard that
happens on the air,
too. Is that a saying? I don't know if I've ever heard
that.
Yeah,
a little.
Yeah, but hey.
One thing I noticed when Morrow showed up, it was like even in the locker room right away, I felt like his presence was there, his personality, very loud, boisterous, was making even messing with the lights, turning on and off. It was just surprising for someone that had just arrived to the team.
He's a character.
Yes, for sure.
There's no question. But I think there's a difference between being a character and being a leader. And I'm not saying Foster's not a leader, but I do think that the Saints roster, if you're looking for reasons to say, okay, why should we be confident despite, you know, all the national pundits saying, oh, there's not enough talent, there's whatever. And it's, you know, one big thing they have in their corner is basically in every room on this team, in every position group, you have a really strong leadership type player. Right, in the defensive end group, you have Cam Jordan. In the linebacker room, you have DeMario Davis. In the safety room, you have Tyrann Mathieu.
It's pretty unbelievable, those three right there.
In the running back room, you have Alvin Kamara. You know, in the tight end room, you have Taysom Hill. I kind of still look at him as a tight end, but and Foster, who I do think is a good accountability type guy, right? And so, you know, I think that benefits
McCoy's
you as a team.
McCoy's kind of turned that dude on the offensive line group.
You have Eric McCoy, right, who I think is really taking a step forward. So,
right,
you know, I think that's the type of thing that when you, you know, you could look at the, if you look at a Madden roster and you see like, wow, why are the Saints rated lower than I feel like they should be? They feel like they are going to win more games than maybe that number would indicate. It's because when you have leadership like that, it helps you, you know, the sum of your parts, right? It helps you outperform what might on paper not look like the best roster in the NFL, right? So I think that's what you're hoping is the case, and the accountability is a part of that. You know, that's why you go to Irvine. Now, part of that's getting out of the heat, but part of that is kind of the bonding, the team chemistry that you're able to generate by kind of sending everyone off on their own, putting them in hotel rooms, giving them nothing really to do but to be together and work on stuff and like become closer as a team. And, you know, that's something that has to manifest on game day. And if it does, hey, maybe you can win a couple games that otherwise might have gone the other way because you're able to find that extra gear. You know, but sometimes that's, you know, you could say that. It's really easy to say that.
Yeah.
And it's a lot harder to actually put that into practice.
I know that you weren't out with the team for the West Virginia days, but I got to imagine being sequestered out in L.A. is a lot better than West Virginia.
I have no frame of reference. I imagine it is. I mean, the weather is probably similar. I don't know, it probably rained a little bit more in West Virginia than it did in California.
We had a few rain days, but yeah, it was waking up in the morning, very cool, comfortable temperatures.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more to do, generally speaking,
exactly,
than there would have been
right
in West Virginia.
Maybe more to get in trouble with, too.
Probably ate fewer Subway sandwiches than you did. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, hopefully that manifests into something. Now, do they do that again if it worked? That's the question. But I think that's a happy problem to have if it ends up being because you won 11, 12 games and went to the playoffs.
I think we've heard from a ton of people, though, that the plan is going forward to be back in Metairie for next season's training camp, not to be in a destination.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to just go to California just to go to California. They also, next year, you're going to have one road preseason game and two home preseason games.
Right.
Whereas this year you had two road preseason games, so that
kind
allowed
of made
you
a little sense there.
So I think a scenario where, hey, we have the first preseason game on the road, maybe they give you LA, the Rams or the Chargers, and maybe you start camp out there,
yeah,
and then you finish camp here, kind of like they did this year, but with the next, like, instead of staying out there for that second week, you come back after the road game. After, you know, the Cardinals game, you would have come home.
Yeah.
I think that's a scenario that might make sense because you're taking advantage of the facility, your own facility, a lot more than maybe you did this year. I don't think you're going to – you know, 28 days, that's too long, I think, for any team. That's just – I think it wears on you after a while, and that last week felt like, you know, from my perspective, and I'm sure the players felt like – Jamal Williams definitely felt that way. it drags on a little bit because you feel like you got the work that you needed to get done, and now it's like, okay, let's get ready for the season. But, you know, if they lose 10 games, then no way they're doing it again.
That all-important thing, winning, the importance of winning. Mora was asked, how important is a successful season this year for the team and for head coach Dennis Allen?
Obviously, there is a lot of noise, and again, back to expectations. We're a good football team with a good roster, with experienced players, and we need to make the playoffs, and we need to make a push in the playoffs, right? So good enough is never really truly good enough. So you could have a winning season all you want. You could have all these accolades and all these stats and all these Pro Bowlers, but there's one winner in this league, and then there's a whole lot of losers, right? And you could do that as long as you want. But for us, we're trying to win. We're trying to win now. That is apparent and obvious to everyone.
Yeah, and what do you know? The good old Super Bowl right here in New Orleans this year. I don't think anybody has this team even penciled in as a contender for it, but the team, the guys in the locker room don't want to hear any of that or believe that. They have Super Bowl aspirations, obviously.
I think the guys in the locker room have them penciled in for that.
Yeah.
I don't know how you go into a season and not at least believe, hey, we are going to do this.
We got a chance.
Right, and because if you go in already defeated, then what's the point of playing the games at all? But no, I mean, here's the thing. When it comes to the NFL, everyone likes to pretend they have all the answers, and like, I can look at this roster and know exactly how many games they're going to win. And, you know, Jeff Duncan from NOAA.com, he always does a survey before the season every year. And my issue of, like, when I answer that question is I have to balance how many games do I – do I think they can win?
Right, the optimism.
And how many games do I think they will win?
Right.
Because I think that's a very significant difference of, like, if everything goes right, I think this team can win double-digit games. I think they can get to the playoffs. Now, what happens if you have injuries at key positions? What if the timing of your season creates a few schedule losses where, oh, well, you know, we would have won this game if it was on a Sunday, but we played it on a Thursday, and this person wasn't able to get back in time? And that sort of thing, like, oh, there was a, you know, a fumble at the goal line of this, like the Falcons game last year, right? If Taysom Hill doesn't get that ball punched out at the goal line, do they win it? Probably, right? So it all comes down to these really tiny moments and swings of momentum that you just can't predict in advance. And so much of it is luck. So much of it is guessing. And, you know, do the Saints win a Super Bowl if Brett Favre doesn't throw the ball back across the field right into Tracy Porter's arms? I don't know, but that's not something the Saints could have controlled. They benefited from it. So there is such an element of randomness. And can this team get to the Super Bowl? Yeah, it's tough. I wouldn't bet on it, but can it happen? Sure. Now, you got to get to the playoffs first. And I think that's the first step. Once you get there, anything can happen. I watched the Giants win two Super Bowls on the strength of a pass rush and Eli Manning blacking out and having the games of his life, right? Like, can this team do that? I don't know. But they are built similarly to those Giants teams. I'll put it that way.
We are inside the dome, folks. Gate B, Loge level set up here, getting ready for the countdown, the kickoff coming up at 11 o'clock with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, presented by Craig's Electrical Generator Service. Great spot inside the atrium. Come see us for show before you make your way to the seats. We're going to take a break. Be back with more First Take brought to you by the Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination, right after this on WWL. We are back here on First Take brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. And what do you know, Jeff? We are also stationed here on Gate B in the atrium.
A lot of
Caesars Rewards Lounge.
Yeah. A lot of Caesars. It's a Caesars building, and they make you aware of it.
Looking at our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line, Jeff Zian from 1413 morning. I've been following the Saints since 1967. Good and bad, I have the Saints this year at 7 wins and 10 losses. The reason for this is because of penalties. Until the upper management of the Saints stop and do something about penalties, they'll never make the playoffs. I see 4 games they should have won to get them to 11-6 season, but they'll end up a 7-10 season. Joe from Biloxi. Well, I don't know if upper management's penalties in charge of the penalty.
Yeah, that's a tough one to put on management. Yeah, because, like, how do you –
coaching,
you know,
sure.
Yeah, coach, yeah, we could put that on the coaching all day. I'm just not sure what the upper management can do about penalties. But, I mean, penalties are an issue, right? That was one thing that, you know, the offensive line, Foster Moreau excluded, which he had a really funny quote that we can't play without some editing.
What's funny is, yeah, when we got to that audio, I'm like, do I have that clip and did I put the bleep in?
Yeah, right. I'm afraid to play it just in case this is the one I forgot to bleep.
Yes.
But, you know, he had a funny clip because, you know, that 95-yard touchdown drive, you know, it was really valuable for this offense, but it was especially for him because he's the one who jumped off sides on the first play of the game against the 49ers. And, you know, that when you start a drive first and 15 – this is not the offense that's going to overcome that.
Just like with record, you want to win right off the bat. When you get a penalty right away, you're digging a hole.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, sure, you're going to overcome that sometimes. But, like, if you constantly are behind the chains, it's just setting yourself up for failure, especially when you're deep in your own territory like they were to start that drive. So, no, penalties are an issue, but I actually thought throughout the course of that 49ers game, one of the things I was encouraged by was there weren't a ton of penalties, at least not on the first team offense. Like, you didn't see holding, you didn't see, you know, whatever, procedural stuff.
Yeah, right.
So, no, when you can play a clean game, your life gets a lot easier. When you can avoid turnovers, your life gets a lot easier, right? So can you be that better coached team? Can you be that tighter team that doesn't make those silly mistakes?
And from game one to game two, you saw a definitely improvement right off the bat there.
Procedurally, yes, yeah. No question. And I think that's part of the reason you want to continue to get these young guys reps. Because, you know, we haven't talked much about Talifuaga, right? Like, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, okay, you have a rookie left tackle. That's going to be a concern. And it's because he's looked really solid. But, you know, once you get into the games, I'm not sure. I feel like I know what to expect. But, you know, that's a big step up from Oregon State, right? Suddenly you're playing the Panthers on Sunday. And how does he react to that? Are there going to be rookie mistakes? Is that going to be something that you have to watch throughout the course of the season? And we've spent all offseason looking at the other side of the line. and Trevor Penning and what happens with there. We haven't really talked about it much today, but he's been splitting reps with Ole Udo in practice this week, first team reps. First time that's happened, and it's now become kind of a competitive situation. I still expect to see Trevor out there week one starting. I expect to see him out there with the ones today.
Right, it's still his to lose.
I think, yeah, but I think it's a sign that, hey, we are preparing for a scenario that if we have to take Trevor out, we have to do something else. We have that guy ready. So, you know, and part of the reason is, hey, you just can't get it done, right? You can't protect the quarterback without committing a penalty. You can't be trusted over there on an island. We have to constantly be sending help your way. And to be fair, Udo's not a slam dunk either at that spot, but he is a veteran who you probably have a little bit more confidence in to not be overwhelmed in that spot. And I think that's something that until the games start, you just don't know. You don't know how it's going to look. And so we'll have to see. But, yeah, if you can avoid penalties, if those guys can play clean, even if they get beat and some plays get blown up, like, I think you're in a much better spot.
I want to remind folks the New Orleans Saints have partnered with Seaside Events to provide the New Orleans Saints Nation with the ultimate fan experience. You can mingle with Saints legends during the inaugural Saints Legends Fans Cruise. Make sure you check it out. We'll be back with more First Take that you can check out right here on WWL. Back here to wrap up First Take that's brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Coming up, the Cajun Cannon on the countdown, the kickoff. Right here, you want to stop by, be sure to check us out. We are Gate B atrium level. On the lowest level.
Letting some people in the building.
Yeah, so gates had to have opened
gates have
at
opened.
11 o'clock.
Where they snuck in, one of those two things.
They've got the special secret media passes that we have.
Don't say that.
It's going to be fun, too. You see all these additions to the Caesars Superdome. We mentioned it too, the host city this year for the Super Bowl. Obviously, exciting times. Got to be around for the Baltimore-San Francisco one where the lights went out. But definitely looking forward to seeing how things shake out this year.
Had to bring that up.
Everybody equates that Super Bowl to what happened that year.
Well, I think, you know, we haven't talked much about it today. We talked about it a little at the open. But, like, this renovation has been going on for, like, 4 years. Like, the people in this building have been working very, very hard to get this building ready to host the Super Bowl, and they from what I can see, we didn't have time to go on the tour that the media took because we had to go and host Sports Talk after the practice on Friday, but from what I've seen, it looks fantastic and they seem to have done a great job. Now the streets outside,
that's a different story.
That's
not the Dome's fault.
I thought maybe they would have had the schedule. It seems like they took it as, oh, the Super Bowl's in February. We'll have it done by February. We're not really worried about the season. I think that this stadium looks great. They did a great job on it.
Like I said, coming up next on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network, the countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Can't wait to hear his take on the preseason finale for Steve.